Cecilia Kirtland, Janet Leto, Ryan Dobby, and George Wood will be at Morell's in Westbury, 8 p.m. That's your concert billboard on WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 on the FM dial. Check the online edition of the concert billboard at wusb.fm/CBB.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB. The time is 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
and a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined by Kyle.
Hi there.
And we weren't here last week.
No, we weren't.
No, we were here in spirit, but we were not here in the flesh. We were somewhere else.
It's good to have a week off.
And while our listeners say that more than anybody, actually, they encourage us to take more weeks off.
No.
Well, you don't see all the letters. I get the unfiltered letters. You get the strained, filtered kind. But it's good. It's healthy. Change is good. And we certainly were in a different place a week ago today. When our British program aired, which was a totally different story, that was kind of cool talking with the blokes there by Big Ben.
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're talking about, you can always go back and listen. www.2600.com/offthewall. Every single show we've ever done is on there.
And yeah.
In fact, every single show I've ever done pretty much is on that website somewhere. So that's a lot of fun. But okay, so where were we last week? We were not in England. We were not in Stony Brook. We were in...
Cambridge.
Now, okay, we've had this discussion a few times. People think we've gone back to England. And no, not that Cambridge. Oh, so you mean Cambridge, Massachusetts. Wrong again. We weren't going there. These are people in New York that are saying this.
Yeah, most people don't realize that there is a Cambridge, New York.
There is a Cambridge, New York. There most certainly is. And it's a wonderful place. They have a pizza place, and they have a Subway shop, and there's a bar.
Yeah.
Did you remember anything else from that place?
No, not in particular.
The two streets and the traffic light they had.
Yeah.
And
there's a Chinese place.
Was there a Chinese? That's right, there was.
Yeah.
It was like the Big Wok or something. Or so Wok and... It had some kind of title with a wok in it.
Yeah. So go out there and support them. Or maybe not. I don't know. I don't want to endorse it if it's bad Chinese.
Suspiciously like an advertisement. An endorsement there, Kyle. No.
Well, I remember no one was in the Chinese
place. So we went up to Cambridge, New York to get payola from the Chinese people there. No,
right.
No, we didn't do that. Although now that I think about it, that probably wouldn't have been a bad idea.
Right.
No, we went up there for different purposes. In fact, we didn't even stay in Cambridge. See, we were advised to stay in Cambridge. Well, we'll tell you who advised us. And it wasn't anybody around here, people telling us to go all the way up to Cambridge and stay there. No, it wasn't that. It was local people saying Cambridge is a good place to stay. But you know what? We found out something, that this place is upstate, but it's also near another state. And that other state was actually a little bit cooler as far as where we wound up.
Yeah, Cambridge, New York is really, really tiny. So we actually headed into Vermont. We took the Taconic Parkway. Can we say that? Well, I just did.
Well, no, we can say that. In fact, that's a very good... you're actually going to hear some audio in a future show, maybe even next week.
Yeah.
We actually were on the Taconic State Parkway. But for those who don't know... There are a couple of ways of getting upstate. There are a few ways, actually. You can take the thruway, which is what most people do. And if you do that, you know what? God bless. Fine. Whatever. Whatever floats your boat. That's how you want to go. But let me tell you, you're going to be seeing a lot of trucks. You're going to be seeing rest stops and a lot of the same thing. It's what everybody does. It's the interstate system. Okay. Whatever. We decided to do it a little differently. In fact, we've done it this way before when we took the smart car to Canada the last time. We took this... I guess you'd call it a non-commercial highway.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of, billboards and exits.
No
and
billboards.
Services.
A few exits, but no billboards and no trucks.
No trucks.
No tolls.
Yeah, and a lot of greenery and trees. And, yeah, it's really pleasant. It's curvy. It's not like a big straight interstate. But, yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
For people that are drawing a blank, it's the road that woman took drugs on and went the wrong way and killed a whole bunch of people. Now, obviously, that's not the best memory of that highway, but that is how everybody knows it now, the Taconic State. It's a dark road. There are no lights on it. And yeah, if you're an idiot, I suppose you could do some damage. But it's also very picturesque, and you're not supposed to speed. 55 miles an hour is the limit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was really kind of cool. And then there's a whole other way of going up there as well, and that's Route 22. Which I guess was the old-fashioned way of getting from New York City to Canada. It's like taking Jericho, not Jericho Turnpike. I don't want to say that because we've been on Jericho Turnpike Route 25 out here, and it's just nothing but wall-to-wall stores and parking lots and things like that. And there's a lot of greenery. There's farms and reservoirs and all kinds of nice things like that. That's what 22 is like. It's like 25A. It's just like a two-lane road for the most part, though it does open up to four lanes sometimes. And it's a good way to pass through small towns if you're not in a particular hurry. Although we made pretty good time. So that was on the way back. We took Route 22.
Yeah, it was a pretty good adventure. And it was pretty amazing to see how quickly we got into another state. And we stayed there. And then we moseyed back into New York. We're really up there to go to some place in New York, which we'll get to. And it was this, Bennington?
Bennington, yes.
It's kind of a ski town.
I kept calling it Killington or something. Is there a Killington as well? Is that some other place in Vermont? I don't know. Bennington, yeah, it was Bennington. And
huge obelisk.
You're the one also who figured out that since we were going to Bennington, that it might be near North Bennington.
Yeah, actually.
And I wouldn't have made that connection.
Exactly. Yeah. We've been gearing up and we want to, you know, do a little of recording and bringing things back to listeners. And the London trip was an example of that. We did some cool recording. It was really fun to record the bell chiming and getting the atmosphere there. And we're doing more of this. So part of that involves packing and gear and stuff like that. And there's a company in North Bennington that specializes in media and like AV gear. So if you ever see like camera guys or a news crew, a lot of their TV equipment, like cameras, will be in these blue bags. And
we can say the name of the company. We just can't say if it's good or we can't like sing their praises. No. Or well, I think we can dash them to the ground if we so choose. We can condemn, but let's not praise them too highly. Well, we will say that we visited the company.
Okay. They're famous.
They're famous. You've probably seen their logo, Porter Brace, right?
Porter Brace. Yeah. And they have a factory there.
They have a factory there. And we actually visited. Now, this is not why we went up there. This is sort of a side trip. We have lots of side trips.
It was only as a result of staying the first night in Bennington that we realized, wow, we're going to backtrack through North Bennington to get back into New York to this place outside of Cambridge. And that is actually our reason for the trip. We went up to a place, I believe it's Ash Grove, but it's up in the hills, and it is a monastery.
You don't say.
Yes, a monastery. We went to a monastery.
I can almost hear it now. I can almost hear what it sounded like when we went there, and actually we the very first thing we heard were bells.
Yes, so imagine you're out in Cambridge and you ride some country roads, 4 miles, 6 miles, you're up into the hills. There's like a bowl at this one point, and in there is a monastery. And couple lefts and rights, you get up into this place in the hills, and there's a chapel and a church, and it's very quiet, very...
except for when they ring the bells.
Well, yeah. But otherwise quiet, and very natural, lots of woods, and remote.
Yeah, I guess a lot of monasteries are like that. I've passed by monasteries, but I've never actually been to one, never actually visited one. And, you know, I'd like to say that I'm open to visiting all kinds of places, religious establishments as well. And I think that's something everybody can benefit from, is to learn about culture, about history, about beliefs, all of that. You don't have to share background or you don't have to agree on all sorts of things. But I think if you just listen, it's something that you'll benefit from.
And I think people on all sides benefit. We get to share a little bit what we're about, to meet people. And there's a lot of religious people get a bad rep, I think. And it's good to seek out the most devout and all ends of the spectrum. There's some on the AM dial or out in the middle of the country you can't really avoid, but others are very quiet. So you got to go and talk to them if you really want to be related and... I don't know, build a relationship or at least get to know what they're about. And this is a really unique monastery.
This is a unique one. In fact, we had talked about this on the telephone before you came out to this on this particular trip out east. And it has a special place in your life because of something in your background. Every week it's like we talk about something in your background. We talked about ballet one week.
Yeah.
Did we talk about parking the jetliner? I think we talked about that.
I don't know if we've shared that story.
All right, well, that's a story for the future.
Landing an airplane.
Yeah, landing an airplane. But there's that. You're on TWA Flight 800, too. That's another thing.
Yes.
But there's something that you were brought up doing that most kids don't do, and it's really something that I think has made you into a better person, somebody who is able to have a lot of patience, have a lot of desire to finish a task that started, all sorts of good things that came out of it, but it also led us to this particular place. You want to tell us something about that background?
Yeah, sure. It's running a kennel. The whole time I was growing up, my folks had been raising and breeding German Shepherds, and I grew up basically doing chores involved with sort of like, it's as animal husbandry, I think is the term, but it's taking care of kind of a farm-like environment, and in our case it was German Shepherd dogs, American bred German Shepherd, purebred American German Shepherds. And my parents were involved in showing and doing things like that with dogs, and so we had a lot of puppies and adults alike at a couple of different places where we lived when I was growing up. So that was basically the impetus, and I noticed all kinds of foibles going out of that when I became an adult. I reflect and basically I learned to really appreciate the experience growing up, and you see mistakes and things your folks made. I think everybody does that, and also that you made, but also you kind of reflect on the impact it had on your life, the good things as well as the bad. So, and I haven't had a dog or anything in a long, long time, and yeah, I look at it sometimes. I consider, maybe if I had a little property or I did something, to make the right context, I would definitely consider owning a dog again. So, but it had a huge impact on my character, I think.
Now, you've whelped, is that the right word?
Yes, whelping.
Whelp a dog? Did you whelp a litter? What is whelping exactly?
You whelp a litter, I believe. You aid in the whelping of a litter. Whelping is actually done by the mother dog, the female.
So you help out the mother dog?
With the whelping, yes.
All right. And you've done that a number of times?
Yeah, more than I can count.
And you'd have to get up at the crack of dawn to let the dogs out?
Yes.
And
that was expected. It was like any other chore. Like a kid might be expected to clean the room, take out the trash.
How young were you? The youngest you were doing this?
Probably 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there. Wow. I remember carrying water buckets in each arm, you know, that were a good deal, like maybe half my size. I don't know. The water buckets seemed huge when I was little.
Uh-huh.
But carrying fresh water out was a big task when I was a lot smaller.
That's why you're able to carry many times your weight to this day.
Yes.
Just walking around, and you always volunteer to carry people's bags and things like that. So it's honorable. But
I think you have me confused with somebody else. No, I'll carry bags, but
uh-huh.
Lots of gear.
Well, so it's like being on a farm, I guess.
Yes.
In a way. Because you're getting up early, you're dealing with animals. But did you see them as animals? Did you see them as pets?
Wow. I mean, definitely both. There was different types. Like we'd have show dogs. We'd have ones that were going to be, you know, trained and shown. Ones that were going to be sold as pets. Ones that were our own dogs that were maybe Finnish champions. Because we did have several Finnish champions. My dog was a Finnish champion.
Finnish as in Finland?
No, finished as in points.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Because when you show dogs, you're showing them for points, and then they get a title as a finished champion dog. And so, that was part of it. And basically, I didn't really do a lot like on the showing end. The real constant was caring for animals, and so that led me to learning different techniques. And my mom always referred to this book, this one particular philosophy that came, as it happens, from this monastery. And they're known as the Monks of New Skeet.
The Monks of New Skeet. And this particular monastery actually is a tie-in to your raising of German Shepherds.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That was why I'd suggested it on the phone with you a couple months ago. I basically looked it up and realized they were in New York. And I was like, wow, I'm out there every now and then. And wow, I bet I bet you would want to go on a bit of an adventure. I don't know who else I would have invited or who else I could have possibly taken out there. But I knew you would kind of, you'd get into it on a certain level and jump in and take it on as a new adventure and be open, just kind of listen and go along and check something out just because it's different. You're that kind of person.
Well, I did go to North Korea. I mentioned that a few dozen times. There are parallels because for me, it's an alien environment. It's something completely different than anything I'd ever experienced before. But the people involved are open, friendly, and want to share their life with you and want to hear things about you as well.
Yeah.
So in that, it was very similar, but in almost every other way, it was very unique. So we drove up there after spending one night in Bennington. We drove over to Cambridge and found this monastery. And I guess over the course of 4 days, well, we got there Monday late afternoon, and we left Thursday morning. So we basically spent two full days there.
Right.
And we got to know the people. We got to participate in their way of life. What we're hearing now, we're hearing part of their morning ceremony, which this might be a particularly special one. I think this actually might have been taped over Easter. But there are every morning they have the 10 of them. There are 10 monks there at the moment. They have their prayers last about an hour or so. They do this at 7:15 in the morning, and if you know me, that's something that's probably the most difficult thing is getting up early. But I was able to just again, like in North Korea, because they make you get up early there. Basically, I fell into it rather simply, and I was able to wake up without a problem and go to sleep pretty early as well, like 9-10 o'clock at night. And you just sort of you change the way you think, you change the way you feel. And it was a pleasant experience being a part of this, observing their ceremonies. They have the 7:15 morning prayer. They have, was it the 5 o'clock afternoon prayer?
Yeah.
And there was a 1 o'clock one, which is a much smaller one. We didn't make it to that one. That's really kind of, they have two churches. They have a little church and a big church, and only a few monks go to the 1 o'clock one.
It's intersex or intersects.
Yeah,
something
like that.
The evening one is Vespers.
Okay.
The morning is Matins.
Yeah.
But it's a Orthodox church, and they're Orthodox monks, and...
Yeah, the cross is... It's got a little slash through it at the bottom, and it's got two horizontal crosses at the top.
Yeah.
And that's the Eastern Orthodox cross.
Yep.
And it was just interesting learning about that and just seeing all the history. They've got... You can hear some of these chants now. They basically update them. they have a lot of things praying for people in Afghanistan. But what was our favorite one? The one that
travelers.
Yeah, they have this
land,
thing.
Land, sea,
air, and
space.
They have updated their prayers to include space travelers. Well, I don't want it to sound, like these are a bunch of people, on shrooms or something, talking about space travelers. No. They're basically integrating every part of life into what they are about.
Yep. Yeah, and they're very, and that spoke a lot to how they were as just in sort of more unofficial times, like around the place, during the day or at lunch. They're very in casual settings. They're very much abreast of travel and wanted to know where we had been, all of our adventures, and very much knew like what the news was in the area and globally. And it was interesting talking about it in relation to some of the things that are going on with the Catholic Church, with the whole Pope thing. We talked about that a little bit ago.
Of course, that has to happen right when we go up there. And the conclave started today, in fact.
Yes.
We'll talk about that a little bit. I guess it's appropriate that we have religious undertones tonight. As we select a new pope is selected, and we're going to hear about it. Let's put it that way. It was definitely cool. But the unique thing, the really bizarre and unique thing, was that each of these monks had a dog. They all had a particular dog that was in under their care, and it was up to them to train that dog to. Socialize it, I guess.
Yeah.
and if it had puppies to handle them as well.
Yeah, their facility was remarkable. So there's the entire like religious attribute of the place, but the dogs are a big part of it, and they have a huge program for that. You can bring all breeds. They have some sort of obedience sort of school that I think is one program. They have a whole adult kennel where the monks train and have their own dogs, and their dogs are also involved in their own breeding program. And they raise them for all kinds of reasons, including like therapy dogs and guide dogs, things like that. And they also have, and as a result of the breeding program, they have a puppy kennel. And so they had they gave us a bit of a tour of the puppy kennel.
There's one litter, only one litter.
They had one litter, which is a bit less than they'd normally have. And they had about four boys and four girls. And they were like several weeks old. They had just gotten their eyes were open. And that was really neat to be able to share with you like a little bit of what I mean when I say I like raised pups and all that and helped with breeding in a different context, but definitely same idea. There were some interesting differences though. So the main reason my folks and my mom was aware of this place and had always talked to us about it or referred to it is that these guys are renowned the world over.
Yes.
For their training and their obedience philosophies.
Towards dogs. Yeah. Humans are they're more open.
Right.
As far as
right.
letting them believe what they want.
Right. So they're really renowned, and they've published some books, and they have really interesting guides and really good techniques. And if anybody's ever been around someone else's dogs, mm-hmm. You might realize that it's the rule that dogs are not obedient and do not behave well. No. You see more, and the owners of their dogs tend to not discipline or correct dogs properly. I've been around so many people that hit their dogs and do awful things, and you're just there as a guest, like, oh, okay, yeah. And you know, it sometimes you have to speak up and say, that's not right, yo.
Or they don't care at all about their dog, and they're jumping up on you and just misbehaving
completely,
and barking.
Yeah.
And it's just sad because the dog is not any happier doing that. And it's just it creates an environment of confusion and conflict and things like that. Now the dogs we saw here at Newskeet were so well behaved and just happy and they'd stay by their monk, their particular monk that was assigned to them.
Yes.
And listen to what he said at dinner, for instance. There'd be maybe three dogs in the room. They weren't barking at each other. They weren't, there was one puppy, one sort of, I guess, teenage dog.
Rambunctious, yes.
Was, he kind of was whining a little bit, but, not begging for food or anything like that. The older dogs would just lie there and just wait for the people to finish. And, they were treated well. They had plenty of exercise, lots of other dogs to hang out with. It was, it's the best way you could imagine dogs behaving and socializing with people.
Yeah, every attribute of the animals' lives is very well thought out, and the way the monks interact with the animals and the way they're raised is just completely deliberate and thought through, as I said, and that's kind of the excitement that I had there, because I remember we did a lot of different things when I was growing up, but if I did it again, if I ever had a dog, I would really read up on some of their techniques, because dogs are amazingly empathetic and really they're a good strong companion. They're loyal and especially German Shepherds. Mm-hmm. And that was the other distinction I wanted to make before we move on, is that the dogs that they raise are they're different from the dogs that I was around, because they import their genetics. So their dogs are 100% German bloodlines. So they bring in dogs from Germany and their breeding program is around purebred German Shepherds.
Yeah, how do you distinguish that? They're German Shepherds as opposed to American German Shepherds, or is that the way to say it?
Yeah, that's as clear as you could get. Is that you're absolutely right.
It's like they tried it once. They're German Shepherds. Okay, now they're American. Okay, but they're still German. Let's go back and just do it right.
Yeah, and the reasons for breeding and the way they were raised is for their program is different from the American bred scene. There's a lot of different types of American bred shepherds, but often, and in show dogs alone, there's a huge spectrum. But those dogs have different ratings, they're bred for different reasons, more aesthetic reasons. You could think of show dogs as more of like beauty pageant, whereas the German Shepherds have an entire rating system that involves the psychology, the temperament, the a multitude of things, not just the shape of the dog and their coat and that kind of stuff that is, it's a part of it, but it's not the entire thing as far as the Germans are concerned. So there was a distinction made there, and I'd never really been around pure German Shepherds.
Had you ever met a German Shepherd before?
No, I hadn't. Not,
and you
not
raised in, German Shepherds, so that's big.
Yeah, I mean, I'd raised American bred for all intents and purposes. They're American bred German Shepherds, and there is a distinction there. And that alone was an interesting difference. But the facility was amazing, as we illustrated, and we'll probably talk about in the future. You'll hear in the future, but it was cool to see their program and all of that, and the training techniques and the way they were about the place with the dogs and the different purposes for their bloodlines. But also the facilities were amazing, like just very, very clean, very innovative, kind of some ingenuity went behind designing the kennels and the runs, the outdoor facilities. That stuff interested me.
Well, you mentioned they did something that involved it, that made it easier to clean.
Yeah.
The way it was designed.
Yeah, the kennels were like on this raised platform, the adult kennels, and they had a translucent sheet on each side of the runs and sort of a walkway on the one side, and then all the runs were on the right side, and the walkway was like 10% of the width of this long, long platform, and there'd be like 20 runs or 30 runs. And what was interesting is that inside of the runs, the floor was this rubber, like really hard rubber mat, rubber tiles, and they had holes in them. And then below that was an angled sort of that plastic roofing material, and it was oriented at an angle. And so all the waste and elimination from the dogs, solid or otherwise, would just sort of fall down there and or be rinsed down there, because they had plumbing at every 3 feet there was plumbing, so they could just plug in the sprayer and spray the whole thing down so it would be clean. And it would run down into the soil below. It was really ingenious. I hadn't seen a system that good in any of the kennels I've ever visited in my life. And they had netting to keep birds and stuff out from the rafters. And it was just really brilliant to see a really well-run kennel and happy, happy dogs. So.
It was a very strange environment because here we were in the, well, I don't want to say the middle of nowhere. It was pretty far away from things. At night, it was really quiet, except for when the dogs were awake and you'd hear them barking. It was kind of an interesting contrast. You'd have all these dogs barking and not being bugged because, well, that's what dogs do sometimes. The place is on 500 acres, so you're not going to get neighbors complaining anyway.
Yeah.
But when they weren't barking, and even when they were, you just had this this feeling of solitude and meditation that takes place in monasteries. And we found ourselves talking quietly no matter where we were.
Yeah.
Even if we weren't anywhere near other people, we just felt this kind of reverence where we had to just sort of speak in hushed tones.
Yeah.
And I think we were model guests. We attended all the services, all the required services, all the meals.
Yep.
And we basically participated in the conversations. I mean, they were very curious. Like you said, they're very curious about the things we had done. We had all sorts of cool stories for them, and they had a lot of cool stories for us. Very nice people. They're from all over the place. People from New Jersey and New York and different parts of the country. And
Boston.
Yeah, Boston. They you know, have all kinds of experiences and opinions and things like that.
And I have a feeling we weren't the typical guests either. So
probably not the typical guests.
Probably had some interesting stories beyond what they usually hear people that are on retreat there. So.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, we were able to get up at the proper times and not stray too much from what was expected. We took a nice little hike on one of the mountains, which apparently not very many people do. And yes, we even got lost for a while. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. There was snow on the ground. It was, you know, a nice winter. I guess not many people go there in the winter, but I thought that's the perfect time to go there.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought that maybe we had picked the worst season to go there, but It was really kind of nice. It was just the snowiest of times a year, time of year to be there, and no one was there. So who better than us? We I don't know. I think it was just right.
Yeah. I mean, a monastery alone is weird for me, but this is a monastery with a slightly different religion than what I'm used to. You know, Eastern Orthodox, don't know very much about it. So it was interesting just listening and hearing.
Yes.
Why don't we listen to a little bit of this particular chant so you can hear how they phrase things.
When you finally come on that last day, not from the tomb, but from your throne of glory, your Savior, at the sight of you, we will rise up, O lover of mankind, for loving you is possessing you. Then do not condemn us, Lord, for you rose from death, not to punish us, but to redeem us. For you are the King of peace and Savior of our souls, and we give you glory together with your eternal Father and your all-holy, good, and life-giving Spirit, now and forever and unto ages of ages. Amen.
That's pretty much how it sounds. They all have really good voices, too.
Yeah, they sing every day.
They really do, and they have solos, you know. There's 10 gathered round and more or less a circle, and every service we saw was different in one way or another, and different monks would lead certain ones, and I mean, I'm getting it all wrong as far as the terminology, but one would just wander around the entire church and swinging this metallic thing that was spraying forth, what was it?
Incense.
All kinds of little traditions and ceremonies and things like that.
Yeah, they at one part remarked to us, we burn a lot of incense. I was like,
they had a great sense of humor.
They were really funny guys.
Yeah, they really were.
I think the guys going around are acolytes, people that they assume a role to basically support the service by turning on lights or lighting candles at various times. And
then at night, they bring the nuns in. Yeah, they have, down the road, they have the nuns of Newskeet. And for the 5 o'clock service, they truck in, I think, three nuns. Well, there were two minivans. I guess they came from different places, and a total of three nuns. And they, I guess this is one of them. I don't remember any of the brothers had a voice like that. And like I said, this is probably an Easter service, so it's a little different than what we heard. But at night, yeah, or 5 o'clock, I'm calling it night, they have a slightly different service with female vocals as well. And it's all very well thought out, very, very interesting to listen to and just to watch. Shall we take phone calls if...
Yeah.
People that would like to talk to us about this or anything else. We should talk about the conclave taking place. They mention it a couple of times because obviously it's news, but they're kind of detached from it. It's not really in their main sights as far as who the next pope is going to be. But it's something that everybody is following, I think, and is interested in. This is the third one I've seen that I can remember anyway. You know, one was only a few years ago, so a lot of people probably remember that one. But right now, we're all focused on the Sistine Chapel and the chimney and to see what color the smoke will be. It was black already today.
Yes, once today it's been black. But they just closed the doors, so you got to give them a chance to get settled. I wasn't expecting any white smoke. So
you know, we went to sleep last night, and we were watching from Vatican City. They were in the middle of this ceremony, this service. All the cardinals dressed in red, right? And it was beginning. And then we woke up today, and they were still doing it. They hadn't gone into the Sistine... They were in the Sistine Chapel, but they hadn't closed the doors yet. They closed the doors at 5:34 p.m. their time. And that's when it actually began. Now all we can do is look at the chimney.
Right. They had unprecedented coverage in there, though, of TV cameras and everything in the Sistine Chapel. For the opening stuff.
Well, you kept saying it was like a sporting event.
Yeah, and there were comments made. I don't know the facts about it, but what I had heard is that it was unprecedented because I don't remember them ever having cameras and stuff in the Sistine Chapel. But this was like the same coverage almost as you had with like the royal wedding recently.
Uh huh.
So yeah. I don't know. Bigger though than the royal wedding as far as impact.
It's the Pope. Yeah, right. It better be bigger. I mean, this guy, he's, we're theorizing, you know, who's going to get it this time. I'm betting on Brazil. I really am, because they got the Olympics, they got the World Cup, And they should go for the trifecta and get the Pope as well. You know, there's also talk that it might be the guy from New York. That would be something. You know, I don't know if there's any advantage to having a local Pope, but it would be kind of cool, I guess.
I'm not betting on anything. I'm going to leave it in God's hands, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's how it works.
Isn't that? I don't want to have a say either way. I just hope it's over quickly because they got Easter coming, you know.
But Kyle, you know, this is interesting because what we did was a microcosm of this. What I mean by that is the whole world is watching this now.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, especially people I know, are rolling their eyes. They're all silly. Look at this. We're watching smoke from a chimney.
Right.
It is silly. But it's fascinating, too. It's also history. You can't deny that. You can't deny that. So many hundreds of years have been focused on things like this, and whether or not you consider that to be wasted time or a big mistake, it's still history. It's still something that you're doomed to repeat if you don't learn from it. So that's why I'm fascinated by it. I'm also respectful of other people's beliefs, and I'd like to have dialogues with people that I disagree with or that I don't understand or who don't understand me. So what the whole world now is doing is kind of fixating on that a little bit. And that's what we did last week up at Newskeet. We were part of something different, and we were very respectful of it, and they were respectful of us. And I think we benefited from that tremendously.
Yeah.
Well, our telephone number, 631-632-6901. And I'll go into delay if the phones start lighting up because, you know, it's not as young as I used to be, and going into delay takes a lot out of me. I know there are phone calls out there. People want to talk about maybe the conclave, maybe the monastery, maybe something else. There are other things going on out there. Sometimes people write to us, and you can too. otw@2600.com is our email address. Here's somebody who wrote to us. Sim is the name. S-I-I-M. That's a great name, isn't it? Sim says, hi, I really like the Off the Walls show and would like to know what the music played at the beginning of the show is called and where I could obtain it. If you could provide me with a download link or send it as an attachment, I'd appreciate it. Another thing, you know, if I may use this music in a personal nonprofit video project that I'll put on YouTube. Well, Sim, we can tell you this. We can tell you that our intro is music from Philip Glass. It always has been music from Philip Glass, but in this particular case, since January, we've modified it a bit, and we're playing an interpretation of Philip Glass by someone called Alec Karis. Last name spelled K-A-R-I-S, first name Alec, A-L-E-C-K. It's from an album called Piano Music of Philip Glass. And as far as you using it on YouTube, what YouTube does...
Make it a minute longer.
Yeah, what YouTube does is they basically have algorithms. So if you use anything that's on an album anywhere, you'll get some kind of a notice saying, hey, this was recognized, and you have to give credit or a link or something, or maybe not use it at all, depending on what the publisher, not the author, the publisher dictates. So that's how that works. As far as using it in a nonprofit video project, in general, I don't think that would be a problem. I can't speak for the people who control the music, though, but I think as long as you're not creating a blockbuster hit, I don't think it would be a problem.
And if you contacted Alec, I'm sure he'd be thrilled at the promotion and whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, you could work something out. Everybody should, it's too bashful. You should contact artists that you believe in and that you want to use their work, or at least have it be an adjunct to a project you're working on. You may be amazed at what comes of that alone. So,
and I don't know how to contact Alec. I mean, it'd be nice if someone succeeds in contacting him. Let him know that we use his music, and it's incredible. In fact, I heard this music by accident when I was out in Seattle with you, Kyle.
Yeah, you heard it on a radio station
playing in the background, yeah. And you recognized it. Way off in the distance on your radio. And it was the same basic track that we were using in the 4 years previous, but a totally different interpretation. So that's part of the story as to how we switched.
It's cool that he wrote in, though, and he liked it.
Yes, and hopefully he'll keep listening. Again, our phone number is 631-632-6901. I don't see any calls yet. And I should point out, we're going to be in fundraising mode pretty soon because spring is coming, and that's what happens around here. This might be one of the last programs in a while that we can take phone calls. So if there is something on your mind, something you'd like to settle with us, this would be a good time for you to make that call. And again, once we see the phones light up, a couple of calls would be nice. Then we'll go into delay so we can take those calls. 631-632-6901. All right, that seems to have worked. So let's have a totally inappropriate ID. We'll keep the monastery music going. And then we will return. When we do return, we will be coming to you from the past or something like that. 631-632-6901.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. You're listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know there'd be music attached to that, but I'm sorry. Okay, so here we are. We're coming to you 7 seconds later than when we actually said this in the first place. Kyle, you're not here yet. Hang on. Okay, now you're here.
Oh, I'm here too now.
Yeah, okay. You said that in the future, I think.
Oops.
And we're a little distorted, too. For people who have never done this, it's really kind of difficult because you have to listen to yourself 7 seconds after you say something and make sure the levels are okay. It's not supposed to be that way, but that's the way we have it.
We still have a call.
Yeah, we have a call. Let's take the call. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
East Setauket.
East Setauket.
Bro, from your studio.
11733.
Yeah.
You know what that means. That's a special code that people in Setauket use for various things.
Yeah, the 33 zip code. Yeah.
751-941-689 exchanges.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been there, I know.
Yeah, I've been in the studio a few times.
Oh, really? 631-632 exchange.
Oh.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
I just would like to compliment Kyle and you for taking the big Northway trip. It seems like a fun thing. I have looks like a German Shepherd. I inherited it from my son. He chose a Belgian Malinois.
Okay.
Just like German Shepherds, they're a little more compact and a little lower in height. They're not as lopy, and they're more athletic, actually.
Yeah, I think the Germans are actually looking at using that particular dog more as they phase out German Shepherds. But that's beautiful. That's cool. You appreciate it. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And these monks sound like they're really innovative, and it must be really... kind of futuristic to see, or unconventionally sane to see people in such compassionate reference and association with the animals, and the way they raise them and the way they take care of the kennel and everything. I also used to walk greyhounds and stuff at a dog track, and so I've been kind of like, I've had three dogs besides this Belgian Malinois I've got now. This is my fourth dog, so I've been around dogs, and I really appreciate the company. But German Shepherds and Malinois, which is what I have,
sure,
just such a, they're just a supreme dog being, you know. Like,
yeah,
you say, they're very simpatico and empathetic.
Yeah, empathetic, yes. They know how you're feeling. They're right there with you. They're very intelligent, and they kind of talk to you with their eyes, and they're very expressive in subtle ways, and just a mystical, magical dog. And just the experience with the monks was just everything I thought and a lot more. Just to get to know what their philosophies are in situ, like with them there. But also, if you're interested, I mean, they've got a lot of books and things and writings, and I just like their philosophy, like the fact that they call. They make distinctions in the terms of discipline and punishment,
communication, empathy,
and they basically refer to it as corrections and things like that, and accidents, you know. And it's just really focused on bringing out the best of the dog's temperament. So I'm glad you heard that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in fact, I can relate an amusing attribute of our dog. She's a female, she's 5 years old, but from the time she came in here, after my son left, it was his dog, he went moved to New Jersey, she's always been very possessive of
And who might that be?
Her living space. And so she nudges my wife off the couch, and she uses her big long nose and sticks it in her face when she's watching TV for more than an hour and a half.
Nice.
And she gets her to shut the TV off and go upstairs and go to bed. And she's like that kind of self-possessed a dog when she wants her rest.
Yeah.
She takes it, and she takes the whole first floor and expels us from TV watching on occasion. And it's very funny. She'll stand on the small coffee table. She'll drop a ball in front of you and bounce it toward you. Anything to get your attention off the screen.
That's so brilliant. Yeah, my father was telling me a story about my sister's dog, where he was taking care of her the other night. He was in bed, and she was sort of sleeping on the floor. And then she started pulling pillows off the sofa in the room. It's like a leather sofa, and you know, he didn't have a problem with her being on it. So she started pulling the pillows off with her nose, and then just jumped on and like made her little bed right there at the foot of the bed. And you know, it's just real lots of character in those little animal personalities. And you know, she's an older female as well. I think about 6 or 7 at this point. So.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful to share that and have that companionship in your life. It really helped me get through a lot of stuff when I was in college, and that's what I meant by like how those responsibilities impacted my character and how I deal with people and, you know, people that are weaker than, or, you know, people that need help or all that kind of thing, like the interactions of like having patience and stuff in the world is really instructive. And I went through all kinds of chaos and stuff as a young guy in my 20s and in college and stuff, and having my own dog and those responsibilities, I think, very much kept me grounded and from veering off too far, and it's probably why I'm here today. So.
Yeah, dogs, I think if you've had enough of them and you go out with them and walk them among the other people and meet strangers and stuff, make you very, they make you very interactive with people and make you very... You feel more self-assured, I think, because you're able to talk to other people, especially other dog walkers. But the dog we have is Samantha. She's so beautiful that people sometimes stop and say, "Wow, what kind of dog is that?" and so forth. And they start saying, "She looks like she's smiling at me and stuff," you know.
And that was Samantha we just heard now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And now, what kind of dog is she again?
A Belgian Malinois. They're bred for, they use them in the airports, and they use them in Israel for security dogs. They sent them to Afghanistan and Iraq, and they use them in Orly Paris Airport. They say they don't even have them on leashes. They run through the terminal or walk within range of the police, and they also use them in the subway transit teams in New York City occasionally.
Yeah, they're good work dogs, and they're actually, I believe that's the breed that's being phased in Germany as the primary security dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they take instruction. They're very quick to learn obedience. The New York Transit teams, they had an article in the New Yorker about a year and a half ago, and they, because the males of that breed, the Malinois, they bite quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
All them, the Maligator, it's as in Malinois, Maligator, so the transit cops call a few of their Malinois the Maligator, because he's not afraid to bite anybody.
Right.
Wow. Has Samantha ever bitten you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, as long as you guys are cool with that.
But we got her over it.
Uh-huh.
Shell shock when we got her from the kennel. She'd been beaten up. She was the runt of the litter, and she was very, not psychotic, but just, you know, suffering from stress, and she
yes.
didn't know how to adapt to people on moving quickly toward her and stuff like that. But she's gotten over it. We haven't had any bite incidents for 2.5 years.
Well, that's good. I hope there aren't any more.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for calling. Awesome story, and I've learned about a new dog that I never heard about before.
Yeah. I'm glad to relate it to you.
And, all right.
It sounds like a fine trip going up there to that.
It really was. I didn't know what to expect, but it was pretty awesome on so many levels. I mean, you have just the serenity of a monastery and listening to other people's way of life, but then you also have this whole introduction of the canine world, and as we've all mentioned, it's very soothing as well. So all of that together really added up to something truly incredible, memorable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very organic. Yeah.
Hey, before we let you go, who do you like for Pope?
Brazilian guy too.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. No, he's the front runner, Kyle. He really is.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Yeah, okay.
Take care. We had a couple other calls that dropped off. If you guys want to call back, 631-632-6901. We only have a couple of minutes. I'd like to read a letter, another letter that we got. Hi, Emmanuel and Kyle. I haven't been able to listen to Off the Wall Live for a couple of months due to a busy schedule and that pesky time zone thing. And by the way, you guys know that the time changed again this weekend.
We got that hour back.
We lost an hour, didn't we? We sprung ahead. Did we get an hour back? How do we get an hour back if we skip an hour?
Well, we gave it up earlier in the year, and now we get it back.
I understand. You know, if people want more daylight, why don't they just move the clock ahead as many hours as it takes to just have the daylight? I don't, you know, it doesn't make sense. You're losing it somewhere. You're not ever gaining anything.
All right, go on.
I mean, you could change it so that an hour isn't 60 minutes anymore. Maybe that'll make it longer. Continuing here. And now I'm catching up through the archives. I won't call it a podcast, and thank you very much for not using that word. And I got to the episode with the new intro, as we were just referring to. I have to say that I love it. It's new and yet still reminds me of the previous one. It's parallel to the U.S. president, a new term, but still the same person, which was undoubtedly a goal. Undoubtedly. Yes. No, you're right. It was. I mean, it wasn't right away, but when I heard it, I realized that, yeah, it could work that way. And I'm glad that you got that. I also enjoyed listening to your adventures in England and the tale of Kyle's lost phone.
Oh, yes.
That was epic, Kyle, epic. And if you want to hear that adventure, just tune into the show where we're trying to get to Menwith Hill somewhere in the north of England. And
leave no trace.
Kyle's phone is somewhere in the grassy hills of North England, separated from us. But we were able to find it somehow. So it's amazing. Well, we found a hat in Iceland that you left behind there, so we can do anything.
We don't like leaving things places.
No, we don't. We don't. And if anybody sees the glove that I lost sometime last night in Suffolk County someplace, let me know. Yeah, it's a right-hand glove. Any more description than
that? otw@2600.com.
That's our email address. Continuing with this letter here. I've never been to Manchester, but it sounded like a maze. Well, it was amazing, I'll tell you that. And it was a maze, too. Hopefully I get to meet you guys at Ohm 2013. That's the Dutch Hacker Camp coming up in August. We'll be there. We'll both be there, and a bunch of other people will be as well. And this listener says it depends on whether or not I can get the time off to go. Well, Marcel, thank you very much. A fan from the Netherlands. Thanks for calling. And we hope to see you there. Let's take this call very quickly. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah, how you doing? My name is Ken. I just tuned into the tail end of your broadcast. Please tell me the name of this monastery. I'll find it from that point.
Okay. It's called the Monks of Newskeet. And you spell Newskeet, well, it's two words, N-E-W, and Skeet is S-K-E-T-E.
Very good. Thank you very much. I've got to go there. Something tells me to go there.
Yeah, well, I think you'll like it. I think you'll enjoy it. They have a website, and it'll tell you everything you need to know about it.
Like everything I'm looking for. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Glad we could help.
Thank you.
You know, I think, Kyle, we really did help.
Yeah, that was cool. It's just a different experience. It's kind of the thing we like to do, and it was good for us to get out and get a jump on spring here and have some adventures.
Yeah, I neglected to mention, well, I talked about the nuns at Newskeet and how they come in for the prayer at night, the 5 o'clock prayer. But also, I mean, we're kind of minimizing the entire life, obviously, because there's only so much you can pack into an hour. The nuns also make cheesecake.
They were written up recently in the Times, I believe.
In a good way, right?
Yeah, they had a good write-up, yeah. I believe.
And it's really good. We stopped at their place on the way back. Actually, there weren't any. There was nobody there. In fact, we had to use the honor system. If you open up a refrigerator, there's all this cheesecake in there. You take whatever you want, and you put money. But they have cameras, so if you don't do it, I guess they'll know.
Yes.
And I don't know what happens then. But and obviously, they don't just sit around making cheesecake. There's so much more that's going on there, and the monks aren't just raising dogs. But I find that in monasteries and convents and various other places, maybe not convents, I'm not sure, but there are different things that they get involved in, and sometimes it's baking bread, sometimes it's raising dogs. You know, I'd like to hear more stories. I'd like to hear what other monasteries do. I'd like to visit more monasteries. I'd like to go to some Buddhist temples and things like that and just compare them all, because there is a, you know, there's a similarity, but there are also really, really big differences.
Yes, and, you know, people have all kinds of vocations and callings and things that they do religiously, as it were, and I don't know.
Well said, yes.
Yeah, it's cool to explore.
Kyle, you're heading back to Seattle after this week.
Yes, I am.
But you'll be back soon.
Yeah.
We have some other projects here to do, but please write to us, listeners, otw@2600.com. We'll try to get to all the letters and definitely try to get to all the calls in future shows. And we'll see you again, Kyle. We'll see you again, listeners.
So long.
Let's go out with some more chanting from the Monks of Newskeet. Good night.
Baptism we could bury with your son. Let me